This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Today, I am super excited to be talking to my longtime childhood friend, Catherine Reitman. We've known each other for pretty much, I want to say my entire life, but we are now adults and mothers, and I'm really excited to talk to her about motherhood, about being a working mom, her show Working Moms, and also about something that she's really passionate about talking about, which is her youngest son Liam's diagnosis with PANDAS. So we're going to talk about that, and I'm really excited to connect with her. I know that one of the big reasons we wanted to come on here and talk today is about just spreading awareness about PANDAS, which we want to talk about. I also, before we jump into that, which is such a big part of this conversation, I also want to just talk about you as a mother and creating a show like you did and having that be so successful, commuting back and forth, being a working mom yourself. I watched my mom being a working mom my entire life, but then also you creating this show that hit such a cultural nerve and that you did with your husband that was like, for me to watch was so exciting. And I watched it before even becoming a mother. So that says something, but I want to talk just about what that was like for you. Like, what was that like creating that, doing it with your husband and also children?
And then the children. I know it's so wild, right? I mean, I talk about this a lot, but you nurture this human being forever before having kids. And you're told that what you have to say and what you think is so important in, you know, healthy scenarios. And then you have kids and this thing happens where, I don't know if it's hormonal or just communally the way people, what people expect from you, but it's like the baby comes out and on the way out, his little foot or her little foot like hits a switch and you're no longer the priority. You're no longer important. Mm-hmm. And all of your priorities, all of your dreams, all of your aspirations, everything that made you sexy and smart and profound, take a backseat and your only focus is your kids. And I had a really hard time with that, Catherine. I was not okay with that switch. I'm still medium on that switch.
Well, what was that like for you when you felt that switch? I mean, you talk about it when your child comes out, but I mean, for so many different people, it hits them when they go back to work. It hits them when they're 6 months postpartum and they're like, I don't know if I can do this, or a year later or another kid later. Like, when did that happen for you where you were like, this is different?
Immediately. And it felt... And it makes me so self-conscious and feel vain. And for a long time, I felt terrible, just terrible about it. And it took me a long time to realize how common it is. And then, of course, compiled on top of that, I had postpartum depression with both boys. So I got two kids who are now 8 and 10. And when my first son came 10 years ago, which is wild that it's 10 years ago, you know, look, first of all, madly in love. This boy changed my life. He's so much better than me. He's the greatest creature. But there was this instant moment of, oh God, what have I done? What does this mean now for my life? Who the hell am I now? Mm-hmm. And I was so self-conscious and paralyzed by all the vanity and pain and frankly, identity crisis that I was experiencing. And I didn't see it in any of the shows I watched and any of the TV or movies I consumed. There were moms, sure, but it was always kind of like a weird runner of a storyline that didn't really have much meaning. They were a mess or they were hilarious or it was this really broad thing or this really tragic thing. And I didn't ever feel the my reality on screen. After a couple pretty, you know, heart-wrenching experiences where I felt truly postpartum depression and what it could mean and not recognizing myself in the mirror. My husband, Philip, said, you got to write this down. You got to do something with this. And so I wrote a couple scenes and we shot it on the weekends with our friends. I lived in LA at the time. And a lot of my friends were fellow comedians or out-of-work actors. And we just threw this thing together. And I was lucky enough eventually to sell it to the CBC in Canada because I'm Canadian. And for years, the show purely existed in Canada. And my husband, Phil, played my husband on the show. Mm-hmm. And like five people watched it. No one watched it. And I thought, oh, this is just some weird, indulgent experiment. The pages of my diary, the trauma from my life brought to the screen. And I'm going to be this weird, hated person where it's going to finish ultimately because no one's watching it. And people will be like, what was that strange lady screaming about? And then Netflix picked it up. And we quickly learned that this is this really common experience that more than half of the world is watching, that our audience was as much male as it was female, as much non-parents as parents. It was a big eye-opener.
I mean, it was also something that I feel like was so relatable, even if you had friends who you saw experiencing motherhood or parenthood in whatever format they were experiencing it, with a newborn, with on their third child. Like, everyone's experience is so different and so unique that I feel like your show really captured that kind of difference of what motherhood or what parenthood is with your relationships, with your friends, with your children. Like, there's so much there that it brought such light and comedy to the whole situation. But I mean, taking your experience with postpartum depression and turning it into action is not something that comes naturally to everybody. Postpartum depression for a lot of people is, you know, you're paralyzed in whatever struggle or experience you're dealing with. And it's also so different for every single person. You have postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety, there's postpartum psychosis. There's so many things that I've learned since entering into motherhood myself and also doing this BDA baby show that I've talked to so many different people who've experienced things in different ways. But taking your experience and your feeling after having two boys and turning it into a show, was that therapeutic for you or was that frustrating for you? What was that like?
Oh, it was so therapeutic. It was cathartic. I've never had such catharsis where it was like everything I was feeling, like I started realizing that if I was having an unusual experience, I should probably write it down and try to find the funny in it. Because there usually is. Philip and I, my husband and I, have this thing where we're like the best realist experiences in life have all the colors. Meaning they've got some dark and scary, they've got big funny, they've got suspense, they had all the colors, right? And so I started writing down all the colors, all these moments I was feeling as, and the stigmas attached because of being a mother. Because for whatever reason, if you feel something unusual as a mother, it is 10 times bigger. Like, look, I watch all sorts of, I'm just going to compare it to TV for a minute, but I watch all sorts of male protagonists, right? I watched Walter White in Breaking Bad. I watched John Hamm in Mad Men. I've seen so many male protagonists who are deeply flawed, really controversial characters, and I rooted for them. And I was forgiving of their behavior. And when it comes to women, but particularly mothers, we're not given the same forgiveness, not the same second chances. In fact, the majority of the notes I received for the first few years, until it was a really well-supported show, was that our characters weren't likable enough. And I was like, of course they're not. We're making huge mistakes. We're I think, representing the population, what real mothers look like. We're bigger and louder and saying the things that a lot of people are thinking, but that was the intention.
When I would see the show, I would watch the show, and then also to see it grow and have this like huge boom of people watching it, talking about it, talking about, oh my gosh, this crazy scene in it, or talking about, right, you know, the characters in it, like all of the craziness. And then me watching somebody that I grew up with creating this for women, but also for mothers and for couples and just people having, embarking on this new journey of parenthood, was, for me, it was a proud moment for me. I was like, this is awesome. Like, this is something that you're bringing light to and humor to and bringing people together to watch. And it made me so proud of you and like your whole family that this was something that you put out there. But I'm sure now taking a step away from filming it all the time and looking back at your whole experience there, what do you feel like was your biggest takeaway or kind of life lesson with it, aside from like the beaming pride that all of your family and friends had from it?
You know, Catherine, it was such a wild ride because during this voyage, my life changed so dramatically. I know people say that when they have like a hit show or something, but you know, I lost my dog. I lost my father. the order of that was no indicator of importance. Both very important to me. But of course, daddy being the big one. And, you know, we moved our whole family when Liam, my little guy, turned 5 weeks old. We moved. He didn't have all the shots he needed. Don't come for me. But he didn't even have all his shots yet. We got on a plane. We had to because of the schedule. And I had been, you know, so excited to finally, you get this opportunity, you get this green light, and you pack up your stuff and you go. Mm-hmm. And we moved to Toronto, and Philip, my husband, was so wonderful through the whole thing. And we had two dogs, and I had a two-year-old Jackson, and we started our whole life. We didn't know what was going to come of it. Like, we rented a house month by month. We didn't know what the future held. So the ride, to say that it was just about the show, it's like, you know, when you have young kids are sort of happening at the same time as your career, it is all the colors. It's a full experience. It's not just about, oh, wow, I'm learning so much as an actor or a writer or a director or a showrunner or a boss. I was learning so much about how to be a wife and working with my husband, how to be a mom that was present and not exhausted on the weekends. You know, all these little things that became the real picture.
Yeah.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Fall is all about cozy comforts, but when you're prioritizing your health, it's easy to feel like you're missing out. With Hero Bread, you can enjoy all your fall favorites because they're made with Hero Bread sliced bread loaves, tortillas, bagels, dinner rolls, and more. Try their all-new Hero Noodles with 12 grams of protein and just 80 calories. So skip replacing every carb with cauliflower and indulge in your breakfast, lunch, and dinnertime favorites while still hitting your goals. From breakfast bagels and meal-prepped enchiladas, to mouth-watering burgers and cheesy noodles. You won't believe Hero Bread's options have 0 to 5 grams net carbs and are high fiber from the taste and texture. They've even got small batch drops of indulgent favorites like the popular Hero Croissant. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code FALL25 at checkout. That's FALL25 at HERO.CO. All figures are per serving of Hero Bread. Contains 2 to 18 grams of fat per serving. See the product nutrition panels on hero.co for more information.
I want to talk about pandas. You've talked to me about it. This has been a wild journey that since learning about this from you, I've of course started talking to all of my friends about it and just the diagnosis, the process of that as a mom. It's such a rare condition. So first, let's talk about what pandas is and then go into the experience with Liam.
You bet. And I just want to preface this with, I'm by no means an expert on this subject. I'm just a mom learning as I go here. But pandas and PANS are sort of the two autoimmune disorders that I'm talking about today here. It's PANDAS is an acronym that stands for pediatric autoimmune neuropsychiatric disorder associated with strep throat, meaning your child in the PANDAS case can get strep throat and as a result of it can have an immune response, an autoimmune response where their brain swells and the behavior you'll witness is very different from the kid you've known. PANDAS similarly can have similar symptoms, but I should say that the symptoms vary greatly from case to case. My PANDAS is different than your PANDAS, right? Like, we all have sort of different symptoms, but PANDAS is the same, except it could come from any sort of, it could come from COVID, it can come from basically all of the big hits outside of strep throat can give you PANS. So it's been a very frustrating journey, I'll say, because there's such little information out there on this thing. And when you reached out, I was really excited to talk about it because it isn't something I've spoken about, largely because I've been learning so much as I go here. And you start questioning the legitimacy of this thing. And let me tell you, this thing is legitimate and it is ripping families apart. It's a brutal disorder. We're lucky to have a lighter case of it. But, you know, I've become obsessed with finding podcasts and stories about it. And there's some cases out there that if you don't know anything about it and you're listening right now, or if you've heard about a case of it in your school, because it's so unusual and rare, reach out to that mom, reach out to that dad, because they probably are drowning and can use support in a major way.
Let's go back, because we hear strep throat from that. And that's something that I feel like
everybody's
everywhere.
Yep.
You know, the amount of times I remember one of us having strep throat when we were little, it's something that you talk about in schools, in elementary schools, kids get that. Let's just talk about like how that works and how that connects to the behaviors that you were noticing or what flagged you with your son's behavior that you were like, this isn't, something's wrong here.
Totally. And a great question. Strep, it is tricky and clever and so sophisticated. So first of all, having strep throat doesn't mean you have PANDAS. Strep throat doesn't mean you have PANS. Strep throat is its own monster. But strep throat and the molecules that are in strep throat can be very clever. And they do something called molecular mimicry, where they can pretend, they take on the shape of one of your molecules. Again, I'm not an expert, but I've done my reading just because of my son. And your immune system, in the hopes of trying to find these strep and attack them, often attacks your brain. It doesn't know where to go. It's hiding the strep. And as a result, your brain swells. And when your brain is swollen, that is what leads to a lot of really strange behavior. And I can take you through my son's story, but it were things that were so unusual for him. And it took one fantastic pediatrician to sort of bring the whole thing. She said, we're doing a strep test. So I'll dive in, if
yeah,
that's okay.
Please
but
do, yeah.
Liam is just a phenomenal kid. And, you know, you were so kind. You reached out to be like, hey, how much do you want to share the story? And I've been really careful to not talk about it, only because there's such a stigma around troubled kids. And I started to realize over the last year how my kid is not a troubled kid, but he's suffering from a really hard diagnosis, one that he's been really brave and frankly a badass through. I don't know if I could have handled it as well as he has. But anyway, he's a great kid, was doing great in school, really smart, really cuddly, lovey, had a bunch of buddies. And last year, everything changed. We were on a trip, my husband and I, away from the kids, when I heard that he wouldn't get out of the car. We had someone dropping him off at school and he wouldn't get out of the car. Doesn't sound like him. He loves his class. He loves his teachers. He loves his friends. And so we came home. He didn't go to school that day. And I brought him to school. I figured, oh, he's just acting out because I was away. Turns out separation anxiety is a major symptom of PANDAS. Didn't know this at the time. And I brought him to school. And he wouldn't let go of my arm. He would not go into the classroom. And this was not a needy kid. And it was wild. I finally got really tough on him. And I said, you're going into that classroom. I have work to do. It's school. Kids go to school. Let's go, right? And I walked to my car and he took off running and ran towards the parking lot. And the teachers panicked because we live in a really beautiful, sweet little area where schools don't even have fences around them. And he could have really, you know, gotten into trouble. And so I had to stay for hours and sit outside the classroom just so he could see me through the glass.
Wow.
And I thought, okay, this is a weird moment, but I don't know about you. As a mom, like you're always sort of justifying like, okay, this is just this. It's just mm-hmm. this and he'll move on from it. But then the symptoms started to get weirder. He started to have OCD behavior. It felt like he had to control the play date. He had to control the meal. He had to control what food was touching on his plate. He had to control all these details, what he was wearing, the texture of his food, texture issues about the clothes he was wearing, about the food he was eating. And everything started to pile up. And then I think the big alarm for us was that he stopped being able to read or write. And this is a kid who was like really not ahead of the class, but doing just fine, really clearly smart. And he could no longer recognize letters. And this was in first grade. So I should clarify that it wasn't like he was a 10-year-old losing his ability to read or write. He was sort of on a trajectory to read and write, and it stopped. And as his writing became like hieroglyphics, they were symbols, they were no longer letters. And his teachers got really concerned, and obviously we were. And then the more frustrated he got about not being able to keep up with his class, he started to act out, which finally resulted in him running away from the classroom again and screaming. He screamed at his classroom that he wanted to poke their eyes out, something he saw in a cartoon. He said, "I'm going to poke all your eyes out." And I got a call, and they said, "You have to come pick up your kid." And I said, "Okay." And things had been acting up at home too, right? It wasn't shocking, but I was panicked. He was suspended. My 6-year-old was suspended. And Phil and I are racking our brains. We're like, okay, what do we do? This is wild. And, you know, we're talking to him. And he would all of a sudden flip out of it, Catherine, where he would be like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to," you know, like it was him again.
Wow.
And then he would switch into this other thing where he was aggravated and frustrated and not eating and then eating everything. And it was not like him at all. And the school started to panic. And they asked me to bring an aide in to watch him. And the great news about bringing an aide in to watch him was that I had someone who could report to me on everything that was happening.
Right.
And it became clear that the teachers were kind of spooked by him. And they were not calling on him anymore, not really giving him a fair shot at things. He's so socially aware. He's one of those kids that really can read the room and understands the hierarchy that's happening in any given situation. So he became very self-conscious and felt a great deal of shame. And it was really hard to get him to school every day until this was after we returned, after being suspended. Finally, one of the headmaster said to me, or the principal of the lower school said, "You know, I think you should get him tested because there's something going on. You should do a psychiatric exam." And I'm beside myself. And at the time, he had broken out into a rash all over his body, like welts. And he's not a complainer. So I don't know that anything that's going on inside, I just hear the symptoms from the outside. And before I take him down to UCLA for a psychiatric exam, which I called and set up, our local pediatrician here in Santa Barbara, Dr. Barbara Roseman, who is an angel, Liam, my boy, who never wants to go to the doctor, and especially during pandas, said, "Mommy, I want to go to the doctor," to the doctor here. And I was like, "Really?" And he's like, "Yeah, I want her to look at my welts." I said, "Okay, but we have to get to LA. And I could tell how much it meant to him, Catherine. And I was like, "Sure." And we go to the pediatrician, and Dr. Roseman said, she's looking in his throat, she's, you know, doing everything. And I'm now crying and I'm telling her everything that's going on. And she said, "You're not going down to UCLA." And she comes back with a strep test. And I said, "He didn't say anything about a sore throat. His throat is fine." And she said, "Liam, do you have a sore throat?" And he's like, "Well, yeah." He's so funny. And she gives him a strep test and it's positive. And she said, "Catherine, there's nothing wrong with your boy. He's experiencing something called pandas." And I'd never heard of it, nor had most people in my life. Mm-hmm. And she explained the acronym and what it means. And I went back to the school and I said, "You know, he's got pandas. Thank God, it's this thing." And it's, you know, and they had no idea what I was talking about. And I think the majority, with the exception of a few, the majority of the teachers thought it was an invented thing.
Wow.
He wasn't taken seriously. He wasn't given the compassion that a child would if they were suffering from cancer or something else that was medically an issue. This was a medical issue where my 6-year-old's brain was swollen and he had lost his ability to read or write. And he was not given, I believe, and I'm sure I'm not alone in this situation, where he was not given compassion. Mm-hmm. We put him in a new school to give him a new opportunity. And this new school, which happens to be a public school, has been phenomenal. It's a night and day story. Wow. He's reading and writing again. He's got an incredible group of friends. His teacher loves him. So that has given me a lot of hope.
As a mom myself, when I listened to this story, I, of course, thought, why aren't more people talking about this? Strep is something that kids are getting all the time. I'm sure kids have different symptoms, different behavioral patterns. You hear about so many kids who have similar behavioral characteristics that pop up all of a sudden and they're instantly put on medication or told that they have X, Y, and Z. You were telling me that the experience of all of a sudden having your son change and be a child that you're like, this is not my kid. Before having that diagnosis, that must have been terrifying as a mother, because I know I read something recently saying that even when a nurse at school calls you and says your kid is sick, that instantly you feel as a parent like, oh, there's something wrong with my kid. But then to have this kind of behavior from your child that is not a runny nose or a cough, but these are behavioral things. What was that like for you? I mean, I'm sure terrifying, but how did you take that and move forward into getting a diagnosis for your son? Because for a lot of parents, that's like a paralyzing fear, like something bigger could be wrong here.
Totally. And it really is. I think, you know, I've listened to so many podcasts and stories about this since. And this common thing happens where you become like, you know, they talk about the lioness mom that comes out of you. Mm-hmm. And it's so real. It's so real because you don't know, especially in my case, my boy was only six. He'd been in first grade only a couple weeks at that point when the symptoms started coming. He was so helpless in it. And I was lucky enough to see real moments in between the symptoms where I could see he was a prisoner of this thing. He was the victim of this thing. And because behavior and naughty behavior is so frowned upon, especially in particularly strict schools where they, you know, want kids to behave a certain way. And really that's universal, right? But I had such compassion for him and it was relentless compassion. I feel very lucky because I never felt anything but he is the victim of this thing. I never changed how I saw him. And when I would interact with someone who saw him as anything else but my Liam, this funny, smart, charming little magical boy, I would feel sorry for them instantly. I was like, oh, you don't get him? You're out.
When you talk about this, and I'm sure for the people who you've talked to, and for people who will listen to this who feel like, oh, this might be something right. that my child has or a friend's child, you obviously have an incredible pediatrician that was able to diagnose this, but what would you, in your research and also just your experience, if there is somebody listening to this who thinks, you know, that their child might have this, what would you advise them to do? Because as you said, not everybody who gets strep throat has this happen.
Yep.
This is something that can happen if you have had strep throat. And also how long before that did he have strep throat?
So that's another thing, right? Is that every time COVID or flu-like symptoms enter my household, it's horrifying because about 5 to 7 days later, I see the autoimmune response on Liam, even if he doesn't mm-hmm. catch it. In fact, him not catching it sometimes is scarier because that means his immune system is attacking his body like crazy, trying to fight it off, and his brain swells. So yes, all strep is not pandas. All COVID and other illnesses aren't PANS. The symptom list is long and varied. There are cases where kids drop into seizures. They go unconscious. They have tics. They have Tourette's-like symptoms. Insomnia is a major one, which thank God Liam doesn't have. There are, you know, a lot of kids start wetting the bed again. They stop eating. It's one of those things where I don't want to tell people to look it up because the symptoms are so varied that you'll be like, oh, well, my kid definitely has that. Right. And the truth is that if your kid is experiencing pandas or PANS, you will know it. You will know it because the behavior is unlike anything you saw weeks prior. There are kids who hear voices. I mean, it's when your brain swells, the behavior can be really chilling, Catherine. It can be freaky. And separation anxiety was sort of the big indicator for us. Him no longer wanting to go to school and in fact feeling trapped like he was in a haunted house if he had to stay at school. Me trying to put him down. He's a real mama's boy. We usually switch off with the kids, like who puts the kid down each night. Mm-hmm. And it was all mommy all the time for a while, like where it just, he wouldn't let me out of his bed. So those things that didn't feel like him to us, mm-hmm. they weren't familiar. A lot of people say that PANDA symptoms are your kid's worst qualities blown up to the 10th degree. So it's mm-hmm. it's not, oh, just he's kind of controlling. Now he has OCD. And I think what's so scary for so many is that you go to medical professionals in the hopes that they'll be diagnosed and you'll be given a path forward and some medication and a pat on the back. And you're looking at 6 to 8 weeks or whatever, and you're in the clear. And it's just not the case with PANDAs in our experience. And by the way, we go and see a specialist down at UCLA. We, of course, have our wonderful pediatrician here, and both validate that PANDAs is real. Both have thousands of PANDAs cases that they treat, and both can't really give me tangible, hard, concrete paths to helping him. There's temporary solves, and those are varied also depending on your kid's symptoms. Like, look, the antibiotics really worked for the hard year we had, and I'm grateful that we're no longer on them and that he's fine, but it's different for each case.
What were the other changes that you had to implement in your life? I know that you mentioned to me that you, as a family and as a household, have made certain choices that are, as a family, what you guys choose to do to help Liam and to allow him to not be on antibiotics all the time, but to also reduce the swelling of his brain and not have him have these behaviors come to surface anymore.
Totally. And there's a lot of evidence that suggests that this is that the gut bio, that what's happening in their tummies has so much to do with what's happening in their brains. And I guess there's more and more, look, again, I'm no doctor, but there's a lot of evidence suggesting that the brain-gut connection is legitimate.
Yeah, huge.
Huge. And so our specialist at UCLA said, look, if you can, you should go gluten-free and just try it out. And we did, and it was pretty remarkable. There was a huge change. It made a very cranky husband and older brother, but it works. And I would say that the gluten in this country is atrocious. We went to Europe this summer for a few weeks. We were in Paris and London, but specifically Paris, where we were told by doctors, like, oh, you can eat the bread, you can eat the croissants in Paris, and there won't be the same reaction, you'll see. And we did. We let Liam go ham. We're like, eat whatever you want. And we did a bakery tour, and Catherine, he ate like 6 brioches, 6 croissants, a full baguette. Like, we went nuts, and there was no reaction.
That's incredible.
It's incredible. And not to bore you to tears, but there is, you know, like what they're putting to keep the weevils away from the wheat.
Yeah.
So that the gluten is, you know, it's toxic and the GMOs involved. So anyway, we're gluten-free as a house, and we cheat occasionally, but it's been remarkable what it's done for Liam.
For your older son, when you see or hear certain situations like this where the younger one is experiencing something, gluten, of course, is not what I'm referring to, but just the impact that it has on your family, the changes, of course, before you even got a diagnosis, the stress on you as a mother, the concern and the worry, whether it's PANDAs or something else, when you experience that with one child, your whole family feels it. What was that like for you as a mom to support your older son in him being a great older brother, but also allowing him to live his life and not feel like super affected by what was going on with his younger brother?
It's a great question. And you know, I'm really lucky. People throw the word around blessed a lot, but I am in more ways than I can count. But Jackson, Liam's big brother, similar to Liam, is this remarkable guy. And his gut, his intention in life is always to help. Like, it's always to please and to help and to make the situation better. And so he always has been trying to, you know, bring the best out in Liam and protect his little brother. And he absolutely goes on play dates and sleepovers where I tell him to go eat a big piece of pizza and a cheeseburger. And he has a big, full life. Mm-hmm. But I have no doubt that the first few months as we were diagnosing Liam or learning of the diagnosis, it was really complicated in our house, you know, and he saw the differences. In some ways he benefited, right? Because it was like, there's no nannies, there's no more work. It was just mom and dad and Jackson and Liam, and we were all hands on deck and we were giving them our full attention. And so in some ways he was like, all right,
yeah,
mom and dad are back.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then, although I would argue that, you know, when I'm distracted and really happy at work, the nanny really lets them get away with stuff. But there were some big changes, and he had to, and I think he was also just genuinely worried about Liam the way we all were, because he would react, Liam would react to things in ways that were unrecognizable to the Liam we knew. I think there's a huge sense of relief now that we have our Liam back for the most part, and that he's the funniest guy in the family, right? Like, Liam makes his big brother laugh. Liam makes us laugh. Like, I think what was so heartbreaking about it, as it must be for all parents, is that all the magic that you see in your kid is being suppressed, is being dampened by this thing that doesn't really have a path out. Mm-hmm. And so you can find all these like little things to help, all these little things to help you. And they're growing more and more by the day. So again, I can't speak to all of them, but for Liam, it was that we felt so helpless for so long. And when he started to come into the light a bit more, it was such relief for all of us.
Would there be any place or resources that have helped you a lot for someone who might be listening to this and think that their child might have this? We have talked a lot on here on BDA Baby just about the importance of finding a medical professional, if it's a pediatrician, if it's an OBGYN, whatever the doctor is, that you feel hears you and sees you. You're really blessed to have, yes, your pediatrician who was able to diagnose that and say, this is not, you know, this is what this is, and let me give you clarity on it. So I think the advice that you're giving people of finding someone who will listen to you and give you a correct diagnosis. But beyond that, if your child's diagnosed with PANDAS, if you know somebody, it's not something that it's talked about that much, and your goal of creating awareness around it is so important and impactful. But are there support groups? Are there things that you found to be helpful in your journey from not knowing what this was to having a totally new routine implemented in your life for your family?
I'm sure there are support groups. I'm not part of one. I felt it was a very isolating journey personally. And again, if this magical champion of a pediatrician hadn't called it out, I don't know how long I would have gone. Because the usual story is that you go for years and you, right, just think that there's something wrong with your kid. He's a bad kid. He keeps behaving so badly. What's wrong with my kid? And that isn't, you know, most schools will only double down on that. They're not looking for troublemakers. They're not looking kids who are going against the grain and who won't sit still and who just won't eat the lunch and sit there. And, you know, it can be really hard to find a champion. I think going online, as dangerous as that is, and finding PANDAS communities, for me, I just looked for podcasts about it, because once I started hearing a bunch of different stories, even the ones who had nothing to do with the symptoms I experienced with Liam, I felt so much lighter on my feet, where I was like, oh, this is a real thing. There's so many people experiencing it. And everyone's got their tips. The way I, you know, gluten-free and good sleep and antibiotics if you're with the right doctor. Like, everyone has the tips that work for their particular kid that may or may not work for yours. But finding good doctors, I know UCLA has a phenomenal staff for it, just specifically dedicated to PANDAS. But I believe there's one on the East Coast too. There's a few places that are absolutely dedicated to PANDAS and PANS. So I would look into those. I wish I had more specific websites to give. But again, I don't think of myself as an expert. I just think of myself as a harrowed tale.
It's incredible that you're using your voice and your platform to share your experience and also, you know, in turn, help other parents and families feel less alone in their journey. So It's awesome.
Thank you for saying that, Catherine.
Thank you so much to Catherine Reitman for joining us today and for talking to us all about working moms, being a working mom, and of course, her son Liam's diagnosis with PANDAS. And thank you to Catherine for taking time to join us today.